Translation by His Divine Grace Srila Prabhupada. O best of the Brahmanas, certainly the great demoniac kings who were never reluctant to fight enjoyed this world, but in due course of time, everything they had was taken away, except their reputation by which they continued to exist. In other words, one should try to achieve a good reputation instead of anything else. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. In this regard, Chanaka Pandit, Chanaka Shloka 34, also says, Ayusha Kshana Ekopi Nalabhya Svarna Kotibi. The duration of one's life is extremely short, but if in that short lifetime one can do something that enhances his good reputation, that may continue to exist for many millions of years. Bali Maharaj therefore decided not to follow his spiritual master's instruction that he deny his promise to Vamanadev. Instead, he decided to give the land according to the promise and be everlastingly celebrated as one of the 12 Mahajans, Balir Vyasakir Bayam. Shishi Radha Gokulananda Ki Jai. Om Agyana Timurandasya Gyananjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Militam Jena Tasmai Shri Guruve Namaha Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prishtaya Bhutale Shrimate Bhaktivedanta Swaminiti Namine Namaste Sarasvati Deve Gauravani Pracharine Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Paschatya Deshatarine Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shivasadi Gauda Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama 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 Hare Hare Yari Yambubuja Brahman Daityendra Rani Bhartibi Tesham Kalo Grisilokan Nayasho Digatambuvi. O best of the Brahmanas, certainly the great demoniac kings who were never reluctant to fight enjoyed this world, but in due course of time everything they had was taken away, except their reputation, by which they continued to exist. In other words, one should try to achieve a good reputation instead of anything else. So, it struck me as a bit of a strange verse, this one, for a reason I'll try and explain why. Because Prabhupada quotes Chanaka Pandit in the purport, the duration of one's life is extremely short, but if in that short lifetime one can do something that enhances his good reputation, that may continue to exist for many millions of years. So Prabhupada quoted Chanaka Pandit quite a lot. He also quoted Shakespeare, he quoted William Shakespeare. And William Shakespeare, he had a similar mentality. He's considered like the foremost poet in the English language. And he used to... He had a thing that he desired to live eternally. He recognized that the body is temporary and death is coming. Everybody has to die. And it bothered him. If you read his sonnets, it was one of the main themes in his sonnets that he was trying to, he wanted to live eternally. But he knew he can't live eternally because the body is destined for death. So the way he figured was if he could do something amazing, outstanding, then his fame can live on indefinitely. So that was, 400 years, 16 something he died. So he lived for about 60 years, but so far his fame has lasted 400 years. So Chanaka Pandit is essentially given the same advice, isn't it? That, you know, your body is temporary, but if you can do something good reputation, then that reputation will last, Prabhupada said, for many millions of years. So it's possible that your reputation can last. But the problem with it is that your reputation is a material thing. It's centered around your body. Your body is temporary. So any reputation that you get is temporary. It may last a long time, hundreds of years, or thousands of years, or Prabhupada says millions of years, or even for the entire duration of the universe. But at the end of the universe, everything's wrapped up and everything's gone. So what's the point in that? You know, that's the basic principle of spiritual life, of Krishna consciousness, is what's the point of this material life? This material life doesn't have any point to it. Now, there's one verse that Shukracharya has said previously to Bali Maharaj, and he said that this body is necessary because without this body, you can't get out of material entanglement. So that's accepted that this body is necessary. But actually, it's only necessary because we've got the body. We actually don't need the body. We've made the mistake of accepting the body. Now that we've got the body, we have to use the body properly in order to get out of material entanglement. But to say that the body is necessary for the soul is not true, because the soul does not need the body. The soul is distinct from the body. The body cannot exist without the soul, but the soul can exist in perfection without the body. So, Bali Maharaj, he's given this advice. He says one should try to achieve a good reputation instead of anything else. So it seems a bit odd, because he's a Mahajan. He's considered an authority in devotional service, in Krishna consciousness. So why is he speaking on the same level as people like Shakespeare and Chanakya Pandit? You know, like Prabhupada quoted Chanakya Pandit often, but it's not that Chanakya Pandit is accepted as a self-realized authority in spiritual life. He gave good moral instructions. William Shakespeare, he's not a self-realized soul. So it's not that we just accept their opinions in regards to Krishna consciousness. So why is he speaking like this? So Prabhupada mentions that he's celebrated as one of the Mahajans. Mahajana Yena Katasa Panta. In order to practice Krishna consciousness, we have to follow in the footsteps of the Mahajans. So there's 12 Mahajans, and they're described in Canto 6, where Yamaraj is instructing his messengers after Yamaraj's messengers were defeated by the Vishnu Dutas, messengers of Lord Vishnu. They were under the impression that Yamaraj was the most powerful personality, but then they were defeated by the messengers of Lord Vishnu. So, Canto 6, Chapter 3, text 19, 20, and 21. So he's instructing his messengers, and he says, it's a famous verse, Dharmantu Sakshat Bhagavat Pranitam. Prabhupada quoted that verse a lot. He said, real religious principles are enacted by the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Although fully situated in the mode of goodness, even the great rishis who occupy the topmost planets cannot ascertain the real religious principles, nor can the demigods or the leaders of Siddhaloka, to say nothing of the asuras, ordinary human beings, vidyadharas or charanas. So he's saying it's very difficult to ascertain what is religion. Even the great rishis have difficulty in trying to understand what it is we're supposed to do. Because we've appeared in this world. Somehow, for some reason, we're born here. Nobody really knows why. We just find ourselves here. And once we find ourselves here, there's so many opinions as to what we should do with our life, what's good and what's bad. But what is it that's the actual good, the Shreya, Shreya Uttama, the ultimate good for the living entity? What is it that's the ultimate good for the living entity? That's a very difficult thing to establish, because everybody has their own opinion. And according to a person's intelligence, he can come up with very intelligent opinions as to what we should do in this world. Now, Yamaraj is saying that it's very difficult, even for the great rishis, perfected sages, purely in the mode of goodness. Mode of goodness means you've got a clear mind. You're not mad, you know. You're not like people like us, whose brains practically don't even work properly half the time. You know, even for them whose brains work properly, it's very difficult to establish what is real dharma, what is the proper thing to be done with this life. So he says there's only 12 people who know what should be done in life, which is Swayambhur Narada Shambhu, Kumara Kapilo Manu, Pralado Janako Bhishmo, Balar Vyasakir Vayam. Dwadashir, sorry, my eyes are not so good. Dwadashir Vijani Mo, Dharman Bhagavatam, Bataha, Guyam Bishudham, Durbodham, Yam Gyatvamritam Ashnutei. It says, Lord Brahma, Bhagavan Narada, Lord Shiva, the four Kumaras, Lord Kapila, the son of Devahuti, Svayambhuva Manu, Prahlad Maharaj, Janaka Maharaj, Grandfather Bhishma, Bali Maharaj, Sukadev Goswami, and I myself, being Yamaraj, know the real religious principle. My dear servants, this transcendental religious principle, which is known as Bhagavat Dharma, or surrender unto the Supreme Lord and love for Him, is uncontaminated by the material modes of nature. It is very confidential and difficult for ordinary human beings to understand. But if by chance one fortunately understands it, he is immediately liberated, and thus he returns home back to Godhead. So it's described as very confidential and it's very difficult for ordinary human beings to understand. Now, the process of bhakti, you could say the process of sadhana bhakti is very easy to understand because it's centered around rules and regulations. That's easy. That's what we want in the world, isn't it? Even children. Children want to know what the rules are. And as we grow up, we need to know what the rules are. What are the rules? When you come in, when you're in a certain society or a certain community, there's a certain etiquette, and you want to know what's the etiquette, what are the rules, what do I do? So sadhana bhakti is easy to understand because you get up early, you chant the holy names, you do kirtan, you do different services. There's books explaining what it is you do in bhakti. So bhakti is very simple in that way. But they're saying that bhakti is actually very difficult to understand, very confidential, and very difficult to understand. Now, the reason it's very difficult to understand is because pure bhakti, unalloyed, pure devotional service, which is actual bhakti, is something that we've never experienced in our existence. That's why it's difficult to understand. Even the acharyas, the mahajans, all have different ways to try and explain what bhakti is. And it's a very elusive thing to understand what bhakti is. Now the reason is, it's like Krishna says, Raja Vidya Raja Guyam. It's the king of knowledge and the king of most confidential secrets. Because it gives direct perception of the self by realization. So the point of bhakti is that it's realization. It's not something you understand with your intelligence. It's not something you can squeeze into your brain. It's the experience of the soul. It's the soul's relationship with the Supreme. Now, the soul's relationship with the Supreme is not something that we have any experience of in the material world. The only thing we have experience of is the interaction of the senses and the sense objects. Krishna says, Indriyan Indriyarte Shu Bhartanta Iti Dharayan, is that a sober person can see that the senses are acting, only the senses are interacting with the sense objects, but that the soul is aloof from that. So in our life in the material world, the only thing we have experience of is the mind and the intelligence and the senses. We see, we hear, we touch, we taste, we feel. Then with our bodies we can move around, we can speak, we can act in the world. And all of that experience with the body is filtered into the mind. And the mind means that capacity to accept and reject. Sankalpa vikalpa. We like one thing, we don't like another thing. That's the mind. Then the intelligence is that thing which gives good advice. I like this thing, but should I do it or should I not do it? For the intelligence. And then the ego is our sense of identity, that we're identifying with one particular part of the material world, namely this body and this mind. We're identifying that that's me. So Krishna says, Prabhupada quoted the verse yesterday, in yesterday's class, Bhumir aponalo vayu kamano buddhir evacha. Ahankara iti ame bina prakriti rashtada. He said that people commonly think that the mind is spiritual, but the mind is not spiritual. The mind is material. The body is material. Bhumir apo nalo vayu. Earth, water, fire, air, ether means the physical body and our physical surroundings. Manas, buddhir, ahankar, the mind, the intelligence, and the ego. All of these are material, and none of these can understand what bhakti is. Which is our problem, because the only facility we have to understand things is with the mind and the intelligence. But bhakti is that thing which is beyond the mind and the intelligence. Narada Muni says, Sarvapadi Banir Muktam Tatparat Bena Nirmalam Rishikena Rishikesha Sevanam Bhaktir Uchate. So it's commonly quoted that Rishikena Rishikesha Sevanam, when the senses are engaged in the sense objects, in the Lord, when the senses are engaged in the service of the master of the senses. Rishikena is the senses, Rishikesha is Krishna. So when the senses are engaged in Krishna's service, bhaktir uchate, that is called bhakti. But there's a qualification in the first part of that verse. Sarvapadi vin nirmuktam, tatparat vena nirmalam. Nirmalam means nirmala, mala means contamination. So nirmala means completely pure. So when the soul is completely pure, purified of what? Is sarvapadi. Upadi means designations. Prabhupada would always say, I am a human being, I am black, I am white, I am Indian, I am a human being, I am a dog, I am Hindu, I am Christian, I am Muslim. These are all designations. In the Shastra it's described that upadi Upadi is a designation. It's described as a vehicle, because the soul is the thing which is acting. And in order for the soul to act, in order for the soul to think, it needs an intelligence. So the intelligence is the upadi, the vehicle for the soul to think. In order to enjoy in the world, we need a mind for accepting, for liking one thing and not liking another thing. So the upadi, the vehicle for the soul to like one thing and not like another thing in the world, is called the mind. And then the karma upadi, in order to work in the world, we need a body. So the body is called karma upadi. So these upadis, designations, means the body, the mind, the intelligence, and the ego. So sarva upadi vinir muktam. Muktam means liberated. So when a person is liberated from the body, the mind, the intelligence, when he's completely free, situated on the spiritual platform, and on that platform, Rishikena Rishikesha Sevanam Bhakti Ruchate, on that platform, when he engages in service of Krishna, that's bhakti. So Krishna says the same thing in the Bhagavad Gita, Brahma Bhuta Prasanatma Nasochati Nakankshati Sama Sarveshu Bhuteshu Mad Bhaktim Labhate Param. So Param means transcendental. So para bhakti, transcendental devotional service, is what takes place on the Brahma Bhuta platform, on the liberated platform. So I had this conversation once with a devotee. He was saying, well, bhakti is very simple, isn't it? Bhakti means a person developing his love for God. It's very simple. So on the one sense, it's very simple. You could say it's just love for God. But the problem is that we don't know what love is in this world. Because love is a spiritual thing. Everything that we have experienced in this world is centered around the body. And when things are centered around the body, it's centered around selfishness. So love in this world, Prabhupada always said, what we call love in this world is just selfishness. We don't have any experience of love in this world, actually. Love is that thing which is innate to the soul on the spiritual platform. So the question that arose in my mind when I was reading this verse is that Bali Maharaj knows the confidential feature of devotional service. He's a Mahajan. So why is he speaking in this way, that one should strive to have good fame in the world, when he knows well that this body is unnecessary? Everything about this material world is temporary. So it struck me then that the Mahajans weren't always Mahajans. Like Narada Muni is one of the Mahajans. But Narada Muni, in the Bhagavatam, he gives his own history, that in his previous life he was the son of a maidservant. And in the life before that, it's described that he was a Gandharva, who made some offences, and he was cursed to take birth as a Shudra. So he took birth as the son of a maidservant. And then he got the mercy of some pure devotees as the son of a maidservant. And then he was granted the benediction that in his next life he'd become Narada, pure devotee. So he became Mahajan at a certain point, in the same way that Lord Brahma, first of all, in the beginning, he didn't know anything. He didn't know who he was. He didn't know where he was. He didn't know why he was. And he tried searching by his own power to the full extent of his capabilities. He tried searching for answers, and he couldn't find any answers. So then he was illuminated in knowledge by Lord Vishnu. And then he became considered Mahajan. So Bali Maharaj is the embodiment of Atma Nivedanam, full surrender to the Lord. Now, he hasn't, at this point in this verse, he hasn't surrendered yet to Lord Vishnu. He hasn't surrendered everything to Lord Vishnu yet. So it raises the question of whether has achieved perfection yet in this verse. See, Prabhupada always explains in his purports, to avoid people making offences or to look down on great personalities, he'll describe that those personalities are they're pure devotees. He'll say he's always a pure devotee. But actually, in order to become a pure devotee, there's a process whereby you become a pure devotee. So when he surrendered everything, he became a pure devotee. And to read through the whole pastime, it becomes apparent, it seems that this is the case. In the beginning, Vamana Dev came in the guise of a brahmachari to beg charity from Bali Maharaj. And Bali Maharaj promised him, he said, yes, you can have charity, whatever you want. So then he asked for the three steps of land. First of all, before that, he started to glorify Bali Maharaj's family. He glorified Hiranyaksha and Hiranyakashipu. He said one time Hiranyaksha, he was fighting with Lord Vishnu in Lord Vishnu's form as Varahadev. And with great difficulty, he defeated Hiranyaksha. Hiranyaksha was so powerful that essentially, during the fight, Hiranyaksha punched Lord Vishnu in the chest. And that he punched him so hard that Lord Vishnu remembered that for a long time. And when he thought back about it, he thought, that was a good fight. He said, that was a good fight. So he was glorifying his family. He was glorifying Prahlad Maharaj. And then he asked for three steps of land. Then Bali Maharaj, he said, you don't appear to be very intelligent. Because he said, whoever begs charity from Bali, he says, you should know who I am. He had this arrogance, which is mentioned, Prabhupada mentions it later. He had this arrogance that you should know who is Bali, you know. If you come to beg charity from Bali Maharaj, you shouldn't have to ask anything from anybody, anywhere, ever again. This is my power, he was saying. If you come to beg charity from me, you're asking for three steps of land. But if you have the opportunity to accept charity from me, you should never be in want of anything ever again. So Vamanadeva gave a very interesting instruction after that. He said that if a person is not self-controlled, he won't be satisfied. And if he's not satisfied with what he has now, he won't be satisfied with what he gets in the future. He'll always be dissatisfied. He said, even if you give me a whole planet, then after some time I'll want another planet, and then I'll want another planet, and then I'll want the entire universe. And once I have the entire universe, I still won't be satisfied. Whereas a person who's self-controlled, he's satisfied with what he has now. And if he gets something more, then he's satisfied. And if he loses what he has, then he's satisfied. So he glorifies the quality of self-control, that a person who's self-controlled is satisfied. And then Shukracharya points out to Bali Maharaj that actually this is Lord Vishnu. And he explains what's going to happen. He says he's going to cover the whole universe in two steps, and then there's going to be nowhere for him to put his third step. And because you won't have anything to give him for his third step, that means you'll be guilty of the sin of breaking your promise to a brahmana, the promise to give charity, because you promised three steps. He's going to take everything in two steps. So because you can't give him the third step, you're going to be destined to live in hell. So he gave him a get-out clause. He said that any promise that's made, according to the Shruti, any promise that's made that's not preceded by the word Om is not factual, and you don't have to follow through on that. So he gave him a loophole, a get-out clause. So what's interesting is that in the first verse of this chapter, he says, O King Parikshit, when Bali Maharaj was thus advised by his spiritual master, Shukracharya, his family priest, he remained silent for some time, and then after full deliberation, he replied to his spiritual master as follows. So after full deliberation, so he thought about it at great depth, in great depth, and then he decided. What he decided was that for him, his name, his reputation, was more important than anything. So he began by having this pride that you should, you know, if you come to Bali, you should be fully satisfied for the rest of your life. You know, I'm so powerful. He had that pride and the arrogance. Then when he was advised by his spiritual master not to give the land, he thought about it in depth, and then he came to the conclusion that the most important thing for him was his reputation. And he said that everything I possess is going to be taken away at death. So if I have the opportunity, in today's verse, if I have the opportunity to get some good fame from this incident, then that fame will outlast my life, and it will last perpetually. So he had this attachment to fame, and that attachment to fame was what, and his reputation And the reputation he was attached to was the fact that I will not break my vow. If I promise charity to a Brahmana, I will not break my vow. Is steadfastness. Later on, towards in the next chapter, Vamanadeva glorifies him, and he says that even though everything was taken away from him, even though he was rejected and cursed by his spiritual master, even though all his associates were defeated by the associates of Lord Vamanadeva and driven down into hell, and even though he was humiliated by being bound by ropes, by Garuda, the ropes of Varuna, despite of all this, and despite the fact that he knew that I was cheating him, despite all this, he would not deviate from his promise to deliver the land, his commitment. And this pleased Lord Vishnu, this pleased Vamanadeva. So there's different things that please Krishna, and it's very difficult to know what pleases Krishna at different times. So it pleased the Lord. So the Lord was testing him in this way, and Vamanadeva, Bali Maharaj, he stuck to his guns, as it were. And he said, no, I'm giving it. I'm going to give it. No matter what happens, I'm going to stick to my vow. So what happened then was very interesting, because in the beginning, Bali Maharaj was thinking, this is my universe, and if you like, I'll give you whatever you want. Then, when he found out that it was actually Lord Vishnu and he was going to trick him, he said, okay, whatever, it's my universe, but I'm going to give it to you. But then what happened is, Vamanadeva showed his universal form to Bali Maharaj, like Krishna showed his universal form to Arjuna in the Bhagavad Gita. Shishirada Gokulanam Nikijai. And Krishna showed his universal form to Mother Yashoda twice in the Krishna book. And Krishna showed his universal form to Duryodhan in the Mahabharata. And Duryodhan, because he was atheistic, he didn't accept that it was a universal form. He thought Krishna knows some kind of magic tricks. He's playing with my mind here. But Vamanadeva shows his universal form, his Virat Rupa, to Bali Maharaj. And when he showed his Virat Rupa to Bali Maharaj, then it became apparent to Bali Maharaj that that thing which I thought was mine is not mine, it's Krishna's. And not only is it Krishna's, it's Krishna. It's Krishna's, it's Vamanadeva's body. That thing that I think I possess is actually Vamanadeva's body. In the same way, we all have some possessions. You know, even if someone gives up all their possessions, they still have proprietorship over their own body. But when the Lord shows his universal form to a devotee, then the devotee can see that actually everything that I thought was mine is not mine. Even that thing that I think is me is not me. It's part of Lord Vishnu's body. This body is part of the universal form. The mind is part of the universal form. Bhumir apo nalo vayu kammano bhutirevacha ahankara itiya me bina prakriti rashtada. The eightfold material energies which make up our entire existence in this world is none other than the form, the Virat Rupa, the universal body of Lord Vishnu. So we're claiming that one tiny little crumb of that is me, this body. But Bali Maharaj thought that this crumb is me and this entire universe is mine. But then when Vamanadeva showed his universal form, he could see that actually the only thing that exists is Krishna. So he became endowed with knowledge. Prabhupada spoke yesterday at length about jnana, knowledge, that transcendental knowledge is the thing that will release us from bondage to this world. So Krishna says, Bahunam janmanamante, after many births, Bahunam janmanamante, jnanavan mam prapadyate, one who is in knowledge surrenders unto me. Why does he surrender? Vasudeva sarvam iti, because he sees that Vasudeva is everything. So this is what happened to Bali Maharaj. He saw that Vasudeva is everything. I won't read all the verses, but like, for example, it's a description of the universal form. From his words came all the Vedic mantras. On his tongue was the demigod of water, Varunadeva. On his eyebrows were the regulated principles, and on his eyelids were day and night. In other words, when his eyes were open, it was daytime, and when they were closed, it was nighttime. So what we call daytime and nighttime is not daytime and nighttime, actually. Nighttime is when the universal form of the Lord closes his eyes, and daytime is when he opens his eyes. That's the vision that a devotee has when the Lord reveals his universal form. We live in the world of name and form, nama rupa. We like to see forms in the world, and we like to give them little names. But actually, it's a common argument in the Shastra is that, let's say you have a clay pot. So we call it a pot. But actually, before there was clay, you take some clay and you mold it into the shape of a pot. And now you call it a pot. And then afterwards you smash it up and mix it with water and you splunge it back up into clay and it becomes clay again. Or you have a lump of gold and then you form it into the shape of a necklace. Now it's a golden necklace, isn't it? And then you melt it down and it becomes just a lump of gold again. So that thing that we call a necklace is only gold, actually. It's only gold exists. You have some gold and you make it into the form of an ornament. And you call it an ornament, like if it's in the shape of a horse, you call it a horse. But actually it's not a horse, it's just gold. And that's the first seed verse of the Srimad Bhagavatam, Mahame Vasameva Gre. Lord Vishnu says that in the beginning there was only Brahman, there was only Narayan existed. And after the material world is wound up, only Narayan will exist. Therefore, what you see in the middle, that you call the material world, is not the material world, it's only Narayan, actually. Because if clay is the only thing that exists in the beginning, and clay is the only thing that exists in the end, well, that thing that you call a pot, actually it's only clay. But because it's got a certain form and a certain function, we say it's a pot. So this is the point of the universal form, is that we look around and we see human being, or we see cat, we see dog, you know, we see daytime, we see nighttime. But actually Vamanadev or any Vishnu avatar, when he reveals his universal form to a devotee, the devotee can see that Vasudeva Sarvamiti, the only thing that exists is Krishna. And in that knowledge, Mam Prapadyate, that causes the devotee to surrender to Krishna. So because Vamanadev displayed his universal form to Krishna, Vamanadev displayed his universal form to Bali Maharaj, that inspired Bali Maharaj's surrender. And Vamanadev continued to test him. He said that I've taken up everything with my two steps. Because otherwise this whole two steps business is a bit weird, because it's like if you've got two steps, if a person's separate from something, you know, you think like if you're standing on a football pitch, and then you have to like make yourself really big, so you have one foot down one end, and you can do a step up to the other end, and then you cover the whole football pitch with one step. So we have this idea in our mind of Vamanadev getting really big, and then he steps across, and then he steps across another way. But actually the way it's described is that he expanded his universal form, that he became everything. So because he became everything, everything's contained with him, within him. So if he takes two steps, then because he is everything, he's including everything. So because he's manifested the universal form, with the two steps he's covered everything. And then he says to Bali Maharaj, you know, you can't give me anything more for my third step. So as Sukracharya predicted, you're destined to hell because you can't keep your promise. So Bali Maharaj recognized that there's one thing that's mine, that's not yours. Although it is yours, still because you've endowed it with free will, it's mine, it's not yours, and that's me, which is Atma. So everything that we think is me and everything that we think is mine, like my body, you know, my house, my car, my this, my that, my toothbrush, my clothes, whatever it is, everything we think is, that's all Krishna's. The body, the mind, everything is Krishna's. But there's one thing which is a soul, which is who I am, which although it is Krishna's energy, Paraprakriti, still because it's invested with the qualities of Krishna, we have the quality of independence. So therefore, that independence is the thing which has to be surrendered. And that independence, that independent existence, is the thing that Bali Maharaj surrendered, Atma, Atma Nivedanam. So he recognized that, and he surrendered that thing, which is himself. So therefore, he didn't get sent to hell. Although he did get sent to hell, he got sent to the hellish planet created by Vishvakarma, which is so full of opulence, it's envied by the demigods. And Lord Vamanadev remained present there, guarded as his gatekeeper. So the progression of realization of Bali Maharaj in the process of becoming a Mahajan is described in this pastime in depth. It's quite there's a lot of depth to it. And in today's verse, the whole thing of yasha, fame. Fame and reputation is good, because if you have a desire for a good reputation, then it'll keep you on the right track. Like if we have a desire that I want to be a good devotee, then it'll keep us doing devotional things and keep us away from non-devotional things. Because so we can use our reputation, it's like Yukta Vairagya, we can dovetail our desire for good reputation in that way. But on the higher level, this desire for reputation has to be given up, actually, because the desire for reputation, in order to have a reputation, you have to have a body, you have to have an identity in this world. If you don't have an identity in this world, you can't have a reputation. So if we have an attachment to a reputation, that means we have an attachment to our identity as a product of this world. But Krishna's point is that we're not a product of this world. We have to give up the idea that we're a product of this world. Apare amitas tvanyam prakritim bidime param jiva bhuta mahabaho. So the soul now is jiva bhuta. He thinks he's a product of this material world, which makes him jiva bhuta. But he has to come to Brahma bhuta. Brahma bhuta prasanatma nasochati nakankshati samasarveshu bhuteshu madbhaktim labhate param. For para bhakti, for devotional service to happen, he has to come to the transcendental platform, Brahma bhuta. Jiva bhuta is when the individual soul is identifying with his reputation in the world. Brahma bhuta is after atmanavedanam, when we're liberated from the world, we're liberated from identification with the world. So that's what we're supposed to strive for in devotional service. So today is the appearance day of Advaita Acharya. So I was asked to say something, if I could, about Advaita Acharya, which actually relates to the universal form. Actually, relates to the universal form. So, first of all, in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, Adi Lila, chapter 6, is a chapter about the glories of Sri Advaita Acharya. It begins, I offer my respectful obeisances to Sri Advaita Acharya, whose activities are all wonderful. By his mercy, even a foolish person can describe his characteristics. So there's some hope that we can say something. So it's described it's commonly known, like Leela is commonly known. Advaita Acharya, he offered Ganga water and Tulsi leaves to Shalagram, and called loudly for the Lord to descend. And there's pastimes and Leela which are known, commonly known amongst devotees. But there's also a tattva which should be known, the truth, like the tattva, the philosophical truth about Krishna and Krishna's avatars. It should be known, because without understanding the tattva, then we can't enter into the Leela. Without understanding the tattva, then the Leela is just material, it's just mundane. Krishna's dancing with gopis, he's in the forest, he's dancing with gopis. And he takes the form of a little baby, and he's fed by Mother Yashoda, etc., etc. Without understanding Krishna tattva, who Krishna is, then the pastimes become mundane. So that's why there's a solid philosophical foundation for this movement. That's why Prabhupada wrote volumes and volumes of books, so that we can understand who Krishna is and who the avatars of Krishna are, what their qualities are, so that we can, he mentioned at length yesterday, we can attain jnana, means spiritual knowledge, not material knowledge, but spiritual knowledge. And with that spiritual knowledge, when we engage in the service of the Lord, then that is on the transcendental platform, Shuddha Bhakti, Para Bhakti. So, Advaita Acharya, there's two verses. Krishna Das Kaviraj Goswami describes him. He says, Lord Advaita Acharya is the incarnation of Mahavishnu, whose main function is to create the cosmic world through the actions of Maya. Because he is non-different from Hari, the Supreme Lord, he is called Advaita. And because he propagates the cult of devotion, he is called Acharya. He is the Lord and the incarnation of the Lord's devotee. Therefore, I take shelter of him. So there's two features of Advaita Acharya which are described at length in this chapter. The first is because he's non-different from Lord Hari, he's called Advaita. And the second, because he propagates the cult of devotion, he's called Acharya. So, he's non-different from the Lord. we say that he's an incarnation of Mahavishnu. So to say he's an incarnation of Mahavishnu is, I mean, that's the commonly held opinion that, like, we say Lord Chaitanya is the incarnation of Radha Krishna combined, Nityananda is the incarnation of Balaram, Sri Advaita Prabhu is the incarnation of Mahavishnu. So to say he's the incarnation of Mahavishnu is correct, but it's not complete. I mean, it's never going to be complete. We don't have the facility to understand completely who Lord Vishnu is. It is inexplicable. But it's described that Lord Vishnu himself, in the creation of the material world, Lord Vishnu himself is the efficient cause of material world. He's called Nimitta. And Narayan, in the form of Sri Advaita, is the material cause, which is called Upadan. Now, in the form of Advaita, he infuses the material ingredients with creative energy. Therefore, Advaita is the original cause of creation. So there's two things. There's the spiritual energy and the material energy. Now, because the material energy comes from the spiritual energy, ultimately it's spiritual also. But its function is to make the living entity forget Krishna. Therefore, its function is material. Now, because there's nothing separate from Krishna, that means Krishna has to manifest the material energy somehow. So Lord Vishnu is manifested from Sankarshan, who is manifested from Lord Balaram, who is manifested from Krishna. So Lord Mahavishnu, from him is manifested Advaita Acharya. Now Mahavishnu is the one who impregnates the living entities. He's the reservoir of living entities. Sankarshan is a reservoir of the living entities, and he injects by his glands the living entities into the material nature. Now, the material nature is Advaita Prabhu, the material nature who is called Pradhan. Now, because the material nature is sometimes manifest and sometimes non-manifest, we call it temporary. But the actual material nature, the potential material nature itself, is an eternal thing. It's an eternal energy. It's always existing, the material energy. Now, that material energy is called Pradhan in its unmanifested state. It's the material ingredients. Is Pradhan. That Pradhan, when it's agitated by Kala, time, that becomes Prakriti. And because of the agitation of time, Prakriti develops three modes, Sattva, Rajas, Tamas. And from Sattva, Rajas, Tamas, by the influence of Lord Brahma, the creative impulse of Lord Brahma, he creates all the different planets, different species, weather patterns, planetary movements, everything is created by Lord Brahma. But we say Prakriti, Maya, material energy. So that Prakriti is when the Kala has agitated Pradhan. But that Pradhan, the original material energy, that original material energy is Advaita Acharya. That's who Advaita Acharya is. Now, because he is non-different from Lord Hari, he's called Advaita. Advaita means non-dual. Because he propagates the cult of devotion, bhakti, he's called Acharya. So that person who is the original Pradhan, the material energy, has appeared in personified form. And it's described in this chapter that from Advaita Acharya, he infuses bhakti into the residence of the entire universe. He's the one who gives bhakti, Advaita Acharya. So it's interesting to know that the actual material energy itself, the original material energy, has appeared in the form, personal form, of Advaita Acharya. And as Advaita Acharya, he is enthusing all of us to engage in bhakti. Therefore, we can see that in bhakti, the Achintya Bheda Bheda Tattva philosophy of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, that there's no difference. You can't separate things in bhakti. If we try to separate things, then that's called Prakrita Bhakti. Materialistic or unrefined bhakti. So we're thinking we're devotees and someone else is non-devotees, and this is the temple and somewhere else is not the temple. But actually, on the higher levels of devotional service, we can't make such distinctions, because Vasudeva Sarvam Iti, everything is Vasudev. Therefore, Sarva Bhuteshu Yapashet Bhagavat Bhava Matmanaha, an Uttama Adhikari devotee, he sees in the heart of everything, everything animate and inanimate within the universe. In the Upanishad, it says it's controlled and owned by the Lord. In the Bhagavatam, it says it's a manifestation of Bhagavan. It's a manifestation of Bhagavan. Bhagavat Bhavam Atmanaha. Bhava means a manifestation of Bhagavan. So everything, Vasudeva Sarvamiti, everything is manifested from Krishna. So to study Advaita Acharya's appearance means we have to understand how it is that everything in Krishna's creation is facilitating our development of bhakti. We should be able to see in that way and not separate things anymore. There's different ways to see it for different yogis, karma yogis, jnana yogis, bhakti yogis. But the bhakta will see, for example, he'll see suffering as Krishna's mercy because by suffering I remember Krishna more, prayers of Queen Kunti. So I've gone over time, so I'll finish. But in this way, Advaita Acharya, we should study the tattva behind the Acharya. It's not just that, like, Advaita Acharya was born in Shantipur, he offered Ganga Jal and Tulsi to Shalagram. It makes him sound like someone like us, you know, because, like, I was born somewhere, and, you know, I got some deities, and I offer some Ganga Jal and Tulsi to the deities. He's not like us. He's a personified material energy, which means we're discussing the Virat Rupa. So he is the Virat Rupa. He is the universal form of the Lord. And because he propagates the cult of bhakti, he's called Acharya. So within the Panchatattva, Lord Chaitanya's movement, we find so much mercy that the material energy, instead of trying to keep us separate from Krishna, now the material energy is trying to bring us to Krishna in the form of Advaita Acharya, is trying to bring us to Krishna. So there's a lot to say, but time's up. So, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Any questions or comments?